The shadow knows.
This morning, we're going to have the double billing of the Shadow, the Temple Bells of Nibon. The original air date for this was the 24th of October, 1937. And again, it stars Orson Welles as Lamont Cranston and Agnes Moorehead as Margot Lane. There's really not too much in terms of records of who some of the secondary players are, but we'll talk about that later.
The bells, Shadow, the bells of Neva. They will reveal you.
Your third mistake, Sadi, and your last.
No, it is your mistake and your last. This is the end of your career as the Shadow.
Well, Margot, we'll make this a large evening. A couple of hours at the Club Caliph. Does that intrigue you?
Lovely, but not too late. I have an appointment at 10 in the morning at the Women's Club. They're trying to get some action on this terrible narcotic situation.
Yes, I read about that.
Oh, the stuff's being peddled all over town. They found school children using it, society women. Why, it's already caused a half dozen suicides.
Yes, I know. It's terrible stuff.
Oh, it needs the Shadow to get at the bottom of it.
Yes, I know, dear, but for tonight, I do enjoy just being myself. Lamont Cranston, dilettante. Let's be the Shadow, only in real emergencies.
Yeah.
You know, they tell me there's a lovely Indian dancer at this new club, Caliph.
Indian dancer?
Mm-hmm. You know, there's the place just there. Club Caliph, driver.
Yes, sir.
Lamont, you are going to do something about it. You've started already.
Perhaps. Well, here we are. All right, driver. There you are.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, that looked like young Jerry Gleason just going in.
Yes? I was that young man's father. I'd spank him and keep him home occasionally.
Spoiled son of a wealthy sire.
Mm. Here, let me have your coat. I'll check it with mine.
Good evening, Jerry.
Oh, hello, Miss Lane.
Your father and sister well? I haven't seen them lately.
Yes, yes. I'm sorry, but I can't wait right now. I've got to see someone, and it's important. I'm sorry.
But, Jerry...
Hello. What ails young Gleason?
I don't know. He seems awfully upset about something. He doesn't look well, either. Pale and shaky.
You're right, he doesn't. Something curious about that boy. Well, let's go in.
May I show you to a table, sir?
Yeah, take this table by the dance floor, thank you.
Oh, there's someone getting up to speak. We seem to be just in time for the main attraction.
Apparently.
Ladies and gentlemen, we take pleasure in presenting the fascinating and beautiful dancer of the Far East, Sadi Bel Adda. For her first number tonight, she will give you the Dance of the Cobra. Sadi Bel Adda.
Look, isn't she lovely?
Yes. Real thing, too. Real Hindu. It's odd, you know.
Goodness. Look, she's taking a snake out of that wicker basket.
A live cobra.
Oh, heaven.
You know, the cobra is connected with the old Indian mysticism, the most ancient of magic. See how she quiets the snake, makes it sway to the motion of her hands.
Mm.
It's a form of mesmerism. We've never improved on that with all our modern psychology.
I hope its fangs have been removed.
Well, they undoubtedly have. So, this is the one they call Sadi Bel Adda. Jerry Gleason with that strange look in his eyes. An epidemic of narcotic smuggling. Sadi Bel Adda.
Oh, how graceful she is. She keeps looking over here, Lamont.
Yes. It's coming this way. Well.
Souvenir for the beautiful lady, sir.
Oh? Oh, a bracelet. Thank you.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, fair lady.
You know the tongue of Mother India, sir.
Only enough to make a small prayer. Only enough for that, Sadi Bel Ada.
It is good sometimes to know a small prayer.
Just in case of an emergency?
Yes. You are very wise, sir. In case you should meet someone who could destroy you, sir.
I see.
Selah.
Just what did she mean by that?
I don't know exactly. Funny sort of thing. She seems to know something about me. I'm trying to recall where I've seen that face.
Rishi!
What an exotic picture. Look, she's stopping at the table by the door. Why, it's young Jerry Gleason. She handed him something.
Good Lord.
He's going out with her. What's the matter,
Lamont? It just struck me, Margot. That boy's face. The color of his skin.
You mean drug?
Yes. The poppy of India.
Oh, but not Jerry Gleason. Oh, that'd be too awful. And our own friend Claire Gleason, his aunt, who's tried so hard to steer him straight since his mother died, it would just about kill her.
Come, Margot.
We must do something.
We're going to. I did come here tonight with a vague idea that this Indian dancer might have some connection with the thing. With her veiled threats and Jerry's interest in her, I'm pretty sure now.
But what are you going to do?
I think the shadow will pay a call on Sadi Bel Ada in her dressing room. I think the shadow can strike back.
Come in.
Sadi.
Yes?
Can anyone overhear us here in your dressing room?
Oh, no. What do you want, Alexis?
A message from the captain.
What then?
Tomorrow is the day. The police are getting closer. We sail tomorrow night at 8.
I am not afraid of the police. But there is somebody else I am not sure about.
You took care of Jerry Gleason?
I gave him his medicine and sent him home.
But you bring him tomorrow night?
Do not fear, Alexis. Jerry will be with me when we sail. I have a way to let him know.
Good.
Oh, the air blows from that window. Close it, Alexis.
Too bad we have to terminate. The grand success of Sadi Bel Ada and the club caliph.
Yes.
But as the Americans say, business is business, yes.
And we still have a small business with the rich papa of Jerry Gleason.
No doubt the richest part of our business, sweet Sadi. Yes. The rich man will pay well.
Who laughs?
Where are you? Speak.
I am here, in the shadow. But I'm afraid you can't see me.
Speak. And say who you are.
Have you never heard of the shadow?
Oh, the shadow? So it is you. Have I not somewhere in the past seen your face and known your name? I think so. Did you enjoy yourself tonight?
I warn you, Sadi Bel Ada. Leave the Gleason boy alone. The boy to whom you give the evil drug.
I have no fear of you, Shadow Side. I hold a greater power. I hold the power of the temple bells of Niban.
You command the temple bells of Niban, do you?
Yes.
Either you lie, or you desecrate a great gift.
Put your strength against mine, White Effendi, and you will see how I desecrate that gift. I can cast your little spells aside and make them nothing. I can kill you.
Kill me? The Shadow, Sadi?
Yes. If you dare to come to me again, will you come?
Who could refuse such an invitation? Especially when made by so charming a lady as yourself. Yes, I will come. And be sure you don't mistake my voice when I do come. Sadi Bellada.
Well, what is it, Sergeant?
Excuse me, Commissioner. Old man Gleason is outside and insists he's got to see you.
Gleason? You mean Andrew Gleason?
Sure, the big Wall Street banker, friend of the mayor. Shall I let him come in?
Or... all this claim deficiency word doesn't do any good. I want to see you, Commissioner.
All right, Mr. Gleason.
What the devil is this town coming to?
Well, if you'll tell me what you're getting at,
My boy is what I'm getting at. He's lying home there with the worst case of delirium tremens I ever saw. Spent the night sopping up liquor in these rotten honky-tonks.
Mr. Gleason, if you think the police department's going around playing wet nurse to all the spoiled kids in this town... Is this what you came to see me about, Mr. Gleason?
It certainly is.
Well, I happen to have more important things on my mind right now.
Then you better get this on your mind. Because if you don't, I'll see to it that there's somebody here who does. And I can do it. Good day to you.
Well, seems like this was a busy day, sir. What with drunken college boys and millionaires.
This is another of those... Commissioner Weston speaking.
Why, you...
Don't lose your patience, Commissioner. The Shadow has information that may help you. Young Jerry Gleason is becoming a drug addict.
What?
Yes. A victim of this flood of drugs being peddled on our streets. It might cost you your job. Are you interested, Commissioner?
Be the first on your block to join the Grand Hour Fan Club. Send a self-addressed stamped envelope to the Grand Hour, Post Office Box 897, Medford, Massachusetts 02155. Membership includes a two-night stay in lovely Acapulco, where the beaches are clear and that's incorrect. Membership includes a direct line to the Grand Hour where suggestions are taken and requests are given.
Yep, the Grand Hour Fan Club promo. Very interesting. I didn't realize the Grand Hour was taking off to such heights. Well, we will return to Act Two of the Temple Bells of Nibon. I'm not certain where this falls in the chronology of the Shadow, but you can still see he's a nemesis to the law at this point.
Margo?
Yes. As though they came out of nowhere.
The temple bells of Nibon. Listen. Three soft notes will strike, and then the spell will be broken.
They're gone. But Hadamard, here we sit in your apartment listening to weird temple bells. Where did they come from? How did you do it?
Not too difficult, Margot, dear. The those who've learned its secret. Its secret based on the phenomenon of telepathy combined with the old science of the yoga. The same magic which gives voice to a shadow.
It's a very awe-inspiring demonstration.
If there should be someone who could command the temple bells of Naban, the shadow would cease to be a shadow.
You mean they could see?
Yes. At the last stroke of the bell, I would be only what I am. Lamont Cranston. My magic invisibility, so to speak, dispelled by this greater power.
And you think there is someone with this power?
I'm not sure. Years ago, in India, a yogi priest, keeper of the Temple of the Cobras at Delhi, taught me the ancient mysteries. He taught me the mesmeric trick that the underworld calls invisibility. There was a small girl, his niece, who used to sit and listen, staring up at us with her round, dark eyes. She was very clever. Clever. I've often wondered what became of her.
But the cobras. You don't mean the Indian dancer at the club camp?
I'm not sure, Margot. I'm not sure.
Oh, but this worries me, Lamont. Aren't you going into dangers too big for you?
Don't worry about me, Margot. Worry about the boy and all other poor, miserable wretches in the toils of this awful drug traffic. Is young Gleason safe?
Yes, his father made him go to bed. They thought he'd been drinking too much.
Well, guess it's time I got busy.
Have you found out anything else?
One or two things. In Sade Belada's dressing room, I found a note signed by a Captain Mullen of the freighter Alboric Castle. I think there's some connection there. I'm going to find out. First, though, I'm going to the zoo.
The zoo?
Yes. Yes, I want to borrow a decorative little reptile from my friend the curator. He's usually very obliging. Who opened that door?
Look. Hanging from the doorknob.
A snake.
Don't touch it.
It's all right. It's a dead one. And a note with it. So, she's not bluffing. She does know who I am.
Oh, Lamont, I'm frightened for you. What does it say?
It says, dead cobras are better playthings than live ones. Was I mistaken?
Then it's not a ballad. Oh, Lamont.
Margot, it's a challenge.
But the bell. The bells of Niban. Oh, I'm afraid the shadow this time will get beyond his
death. We shall see, Margot. We shall see who is stronger. Sade and the bells of Niban. Or the shadow and the snake.
Show them. They think they can keep me a prisoner in my own house. Putting me to bed as if I was some half-grown kid. What? What's that?
Jerry. You hear me?
Is it you, Sadie?
Yes. My voice in your thoughts. Listen, Jerry. Come to me at the dock where we met before. Your medicine is waiting.
Yes. Yes.
Go aboard the ship I told you about. The Albora Castle. You and I, Jerry.
Yes. Yes.
I am waiting, Jerry.
But they've locked me in.
Go through the window, Jerry. Come now.
Yes, Sadie. The window.
Margot Lane, stand by for orders. Jerry Gleason has has escaped from his house. But I have followed him to the waterfront, and I know where he's going. Get word to Commissioner Weston. Time is short. I accept Sadi's challenge. Send harbor police to the freighter Albore Castle, which lies in the harbor just off Bay Ridge Shore, ready to sail. Hurry, Margot.
Here in this cabin, Saribel.
A little. Why do you tremble so, Alexis?
I wish we were far at sea, on our way to Rio.
Oh, be patient. The ransom note was delivered to Papagi.
Yes. What was that?
But there is nothing.
Oh, it's you, Captain.
Yes.
We are leaving, Captain.
Yes, we're getting underway now. We've got the boys stowed safely below decks.
And the rest of the medicine?
We got rid of that. What was left of it. A nice clean-up for all hands, not counting this Gleason job. That'll net us another 100,000 or nothing. Well, we're fixed whichever way the dice roll.
And after that, we live like kings without a care, yeah?
Not even a conscience to bother you.
What? Sadie, he has come. I was afraid.
Who said that?
I did, Captain.
Shadow. So you're the one with your trick ghost talk and magic, eh? I'll make a shadow out of you soon enough.
Not that way, Captain.
No? Here, lock that door, Alexis.
It is locked, Captain Marlin. But the porthole.
No one can get through those. Not even a shadow. Save your laugh, whoever you are. We've got you. You're in this cabin somewhere, and this ship is outward bound. Laugh that off.
I think you may have made 3 mistakes, Captain. 1 too many.
Yes.
Yes, Captain.
But I do not make mistakes, Sad.
That remains to be seen, Sadi Bellada.
Then you will see. Hand me the wicker basket, Alex.
Hey, what do you want to do?
Yes, Sadi.
I call the temple bells of Niban, Captain. The shadow has the power to blind your eyes. A trick he learned in India from a yogi who was my uncle. But I have a better trick. When the last bell sounds while the sacred cobra dances, you will see the shadow only as a man. Be ready to shoot, Captain.
I'm ready.
And now, my cobra, to dance with the bells of Niban.
I wouldn't open that basket if I were you, Sadi Bellada.
You watch my pretty cobra, Sal. He may find you even before the captain's bullet. You will die just as quickly. Ishti.
Dead cobras are better playthings than live ones.
Bismillahi Rahmani Rahim. Make your small prayer, Sal. And now, my pretty one, begin to dance.
Be careful, Saribel. The cobra moves toward you.
My own pretty cobra. He knows me. You hear the bells, Shadow? The temple bells of Niban?
I hear them.
When the last bell strikes, we shall see our prisoner.
And I am waiting for that minute.
But Sadi, the cobra!
Look out, he's going to strike!
Alexis, Captain!
Quick, drop the basket over, Alexis! Kill him!
Sadi! Sadi!
I am dying.
The shadow warned you, Sadi Bellada.
You take credit for this too, do you?
No. Sadi should have known it was not her cobra in the wicker basket. It was mine.
She's dead.
What's that? Who is it?
Captain Mullen, the police, the border.
Where?
No, please, Captain Mullen, you do not shoot.
Stand back here!
Drop that gun.
I'll fix
it. Put the bracelets on both of them, Sergeant.
Right.
Dope smugglers, kidnappers, and from the looks, murderers. This time, the police were too smart for you.
Oh, decidedly.
Huh? Who's that?
Thanks for coming, Commissioner. You were very helpful.
And now, before today...
The Temple Bells of Nibon. Again, the original air date was the 24th of October, 1937. And it starred Orson Welles as Lamont Cranston. And the Shadow, Margot Lane, was played by Agnes Moorhead. And this one was written by Edward Hale Bierstadt. I guess he wrote some of the original ones. I'm not sure how many, but he was involved in a lot of the original production of The Shadow. Some of these early episodes are unavailable. They were either just lost or not preservable. Some of these are found online in collections. This particular one I got off of an old-time radio website. You're listening to Arthur, and this is the Grand Hour, 91.5 FM, WMFO, and WMFO.org. For those streaming or listening through on the archive, we're going to continue with our double bill here. The next... It was suggested that I play full shows, so I'm trying to do that. I'm trying to squeeze two shows in within this hour. So we'll see how this works going back to back. But we're going to conclude with The Shadow.
The weed of crime bears bitter fruit. Crime does not pay. The Shadow knows.
James Stewart as the Six Shooter. The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother of pearl, its handle unmarked. People call them both the Six Shooter. The NBC Radio Network presents James Stewart as The Six Shooter, a transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the Western territories, leaving behind a trail of still remembered legends. Now, in just a moment, immediately following this important announcement, you'll hear Act One of The Six Shooter.
A Christmas gift.
Sorry to be so abrupt from that transition. I was kind of experimenting with these times, trying to get this in. But this is Escape from Smoke Falls. Its original air date is the 15th of November, 1953. And again, as always, it stars James Stewart as Britt Reed. Britt Ponsett, I'm sorry. Britt Reed's the Green Hornet.
I hadn't expected to stay over in Smoke Falls, but when I stopped off to see old Dad Somerset and found him all crippled up with lumbago, well, of course, he didn't ask me to look after his stock, but I could see he sure wanted me to, so... Well, a couple of weeks later, he began feeling better, so I started thinking about moving on. It was nearly 5 o'clock in the afternoon that day. The sun just spilled over the top of Eagle Mountain when the buckboard pulled into the yard.
Mr. Ponsett?
Oh, evening, ma'am.
Mr. Ponsett, I'm Grace Proudley.
Oh, pleased to meet you, Miss Proudley.
I've been meaning to come out and see how Mr. Somerset's been getting along, but I just never have a minute's free time. It's canning season, you know.
Yes, ma'am. Well, Dad's feeling much better. If you'd like to talk to him, he's
no,
right in...
No, just say that I asked for him. As a matter of fact, it's you I want to talk to, Mr. Ponsett.
Oh?
You see, I'm president of the Ladies' Aid Society of Smoke Falls.
Uh-huh.
We're affiliated with the church and do lots of charity work, Christmas baskets and things like that, you know. All the best ladies in town are members, and we don't just take in everybody either.
Well,
Now, this is what I'm getting at, Mr. Ponsett. Tonight's our box supper and square dance. It's an annual event. Mr. Simpling always loans us his barn for the occasion. I've spent the whole afternoon helping with the decorations. Now, Polly Sullivan, that's Wade Sullivan's wife, she's chairman of the decorating committee, but since I'm president, I felt it was my duty to give her a hand. That's what made me so late coming out here to ask you.
To ask me?
About attending the supper.
Oh.
No,
well,
I'm not going to take no for an answer.
Oh, but Miss Proudley,
I've already told folks you were planning to come.
Oh, but you shouldn't have done that.
Now, after all, you're practically the first celebrity we've ever had in Smoke Falls. The auction starts at 7:30. You won't be late, will you, Mr. Ponson?
Oh, but
And one more thing. Would you mind wearing your gun? The men folks are especially interested in that. Get up, Sheba. Come on, someone.
Oh, but, wait a...
7:30!
Wait a minute, Miss Proudley. Say there, Miss Proudley. Oh, dear. Well, after I gave Dad his supper, I washed my face and wet down my hair and started off for old man Simpling's barn. When I got there, Miss Proudley met me at the door and introduced me around. The only name that sank in was her daughter, Ellen. Pretty girl. I figured that when the box supper she'd packed was put up for sale, the bidding would be mighty serious.
All right, everybody, we're ready to begin the auction. We don't want the music now, Wilbur. Wilbur! Now, just gather around the table here so you can get a good look at what you're buying. But remember, you can't judge a book by its cover. Now, which one shall we start with? Oh, my, look at this one. Pretty pink ribbon and white tissue paper. Why, I'll just bet you there's a whole fried chicken inside this box. Now, who's going to make the first bid? $1.50. Don't forget, gentlemen, a pretty lady's company goes with the supper.
I'll give a nickel.
Now, Spud Hooker, you stop joshing. You know we don't take any bid less than a quarter.
Yes.
Now, who offered a quarter just to get things underway? Look at this lovely box. Just think some nice young lady spent the whole day fixing it up.
Then she'll be too tired to dance.
Come on, somebody. 25 cents. Why, it cost more than that.
The auction was kind of slow in picking up momentum. But when Mrs. Proudley started in to make the third sale, well, there wasn't much doubt whose supper she was selling. Ellen Proudley sort of reddened in the cheeks and tried to look unconcerned. I saw her give somebody a glance on the other side of the room, almost like a signal. Couldn't tell who it was intended for, but there were two fellas standing over there. Spud Hooker is one, tall, husky, about 25. He'd been cracking jokes and acting sort of like he owned the place.
The other boy is kind of a different sort. He's thinner, shorter. He hadn't opened his mouth since I got there.
Now let's see if you can't do a little better this time, gentlemen. Here's the next supper.
Oh, boy.
My, it looks familiar. Oh, I guess I shouldn't have said anything, should I? Ellen will just about murder me when I get home. Well, as long as the cat's out of the bag, I might as well go ahead with the sale.
50 cents.
Bud Hooker bids 50 cents. A supper like this ought to be worth more than half a dollar. A little bird told me there's a chocolate cake inside.
75 cents, ma'am.
I've got 75. Now, what about it, Fudge? You're not going to let Tom Leverett outbid you?
Dollar.
$1. I'm bid. One silver dollar. Who'll give a dollar and a quarter?
Dollar and a quarter.
Don't forget, gentlemen, it's all for charity.
Dollar and a half.
Now we're getting somewhere. I'm bid $1.50. Bud Hooker offers $1.50. Are there any more bids?
$2.
You're bidding $2, Tom?
Yes, ma'am.
$3.
Oh, three?
That's what I said.
Well, now, we all appreciate your enthusiasm, boys. But remember, this isn't the only supper you can buy.
It's the only one I'm buying, and I'll take it right...
$4.
Huh?
Well, all right. Going once, going twice, and it's all...
$5.
Now, Spud, are you sure...
$6, Miss Proudley.
You're making a fool of yourself, Leverett. Ellen wants to eat with me.
My bid's $6.
$7.
Now, boys...
$10.
Oh, now you don't mean that, Tom. You can't afford $10.
No, I mean it.
Well, all right. I bid $10. Are there any more bids? Going once, going twice.
Go ahead, sell it to him. It ain't going to do him no good.
Now, we don't want any trouble, Spud.
Ellen's my girl, and she's eating with me.
I'll take that box, Miss Proudley. Here's your money.
Didn't you hear what I said? She's eating with me.
Get out of the way, Spud.
You're not man enough to make me move. Now, give me that box or I'll take it away from you. Okay, Tom, you hurt me.
No!
Hold on here. Now, just a minute here. Now, hold on.
It don't concern you, Ponson.
No, maybe it doesn't. Maybe it doesn't concern me. It just seems to me that there ought to be a better place for settling things, that's all.
Mr. Ponsett's right, Spud. Let's go out.
Hey, where's Britt Ponsett? Dad Somerset said he was over here.
Yeah, I'm Ponsett.
Miss Ponsett, Sheriff Tinsmith told me to find you.
What's the matter, Jake?
Dink Falk just broke out of jail.
Oh,
yes. He shot the sheriff in the back while he was getting away.
Oh, he did.
Hey, well, we took him over to Doc Foster's, and he's bleeding pretty bad. He wants to talk to Mr. Ponsett before he...
I'll get my horse.
Glad you got here, Britt, before...
Now, what are you talking about, Ray? You're going to be all right. The doc says you'll be back on your feet again inside of a week or so.
Don't know what I was thinking of. Letting Dink Falk get hold of my gun while I was serving his supper. Must be getting careless in my old age.
Now, well, you're not the first man to have trouble with Falk. He had a pretty fancy reputation from what I hear.
Yeah, that's why I had to see you, Britton. My fault he got loose, and I don't want other folks to pay for my mistakes.
Well, what do you mean?
I know this town, Britt. I'll get a posse together and start after Falk.
Well, that's...
And they'll catch him, too. But going out in a crowd like that, he'll hear him coming. Falk's a wildcat killer, Brett. When he's cornered, he won't give up. Pick off 3 or 4 of the posse before they can close in.
Well, not if they're careful.
That's the trouble, though. Fellas here ain't cautious. They're bullheaded. But you'd know how to take him, Britt. No, I ain't saying it's your duty. You don't even live in Smoke Falls, but you could capture Falk without him having a chance to...
No, I'm afraid you're giving me too much credit, Ray.
If you want somebody to go along, any of the boys...
Sure, I know that,
I'd be mighty grateful, Britt. The folks here have been good to me. Wouldn't like to leave them thinking that because of me, 'cause what I did, some of them was gonna...
No, you better take it easy.
I know, it's asking a lot. Falk's a good shot. A wildcat killer. It's asking...
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule 0, all guns are always loaded. Rule 1, never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2, keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3, be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Gun safety. WMFO, Medford.
That was Digital George. With the PSA, you can hear George on Can I Change This Later on Tuesday mornings from 6 to 7 a.m. We're listening to Escape from Smoke Falls. The original air date was the 15th of November, 1953.
Now, Act 2 of The Six Shooter, starring James Stewart as Britt Ponsett.
Sheriff Ten Smith had been right about the town foreman of posse. I hadn't lost any time. Spud Hooker was taking charge. I was kind of surprised to see that Tom Leverett was along. But I figured he and Hooker sort of joined forces for the time being.
How is he, Ponsett?
Well, he passed out a few minutes ago. Maybe it's just as well. At least he's getting some rest.
Yeah, well, we're going after Falk. The other boys are waiting behind the mercantile.
Looks like you've got quite a gang.
I ain't got no objection to having you go along, too. Not that we need you, you understand?
Yeah.
Well, you coming?
Well, I had a little talk with the sheriff just before he lost consciousness. He seemed to think that taking out a posse after Falk wasn't such a good idea.
What's he want us to do, let him go scot-free?
No. No, Sheriff Ten Smith sort of suggested maybe one or two men would have a better chance of catching him. They can make faster time, maybe sneak up on Falk unaware.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, it's okay with me. You going to be one of the boys who goes after him, Ponsett?
Well, I haven't exactly made up my mind.
You better make it up fast or I'll take somebody else.
Oh, I see. Well, in that case, I... Whoa. Say, your name's Leverett, isn't it?
That's right, Mr. Ponsett. Tom Leverett.
Mm-hmm. You want to ride along with me?
Why, sure.
Wait a minute here. I thought you said one or two men.
Mm-hmm, I did.
Well, we don't need Leverett, then.
Well, I tell you, I sort of figured maybe you ought to stay in town, Hooker. So if Tom and I get in trouble, well, you could bring the posse out later.
Huh? You're trying to make a fool out of me, Ponsett?
No, I'm not.
Everybody knows I'm twice the man Leverett is. I can ride better and shoot faster and outfight him 2-1.
Mm-hmm.
You want the credit for catching Falk yourself, don't you? Well, it ain't going to work out that way. Come on, boy. I'll find Falk myself and I'll bring him in alone.
Well, Tom, let's go, huh? Falk's trail headed west, up toward Eagle Mountain. And the moon was out, sort of a half moon, but it gave us enough light so we could follow the hoof prints Falk's horse had left. Along about midnight, we spotted another trail, fresher. It couldn't have been more than a couple minutes old. It cut in from one side and then went on ahead in the same direction Falk was riding. You see that, Tom?
Yeah. Looks like Spud Hooker took a shortcut.
Yeah.
You reckon
He'll beat us to him?
Oh, you never know. Never know. If he does, he might save us some grief, wouldn't he, huh?
You're not anxious to tangle with Falk, are you, Mr. Ponson?
No, no. No, I'm not anxious to tangle with anybody, Tom.
But I thought, well, you brought in other outlaws before.
Oh, some. Not as many as folks think, but I've never enjoyed tangling with Van Halen.
Why'd you pick me? Spud's right. He is twice the man I am.
That shooting, maybe. Yeah. But there's more to trailing a killer than being able to shoot. You know, lots of times it's more important for a man to know when not to shoot, you know.
Huh?
Yeah. Fellow's itching to pull a trigger like Spud. Well, he's apt to pull it too soon. And, hey, look at that. The moon's going down. We might as well get some shut-eye. Whoa, boy. Postcard. He couldn't see the trail anyway.
Spud won't be stopping for sleep.
No, I don't suppose he will. That's not a reason I picked you. I kind of figured he'd want to keep pushing on all night. Doggone it, guy, along about this time, I just get tired, huh? As soon as the morning sun began gray in the sky, we started off again. Falk's trail was winding up the side of Eagle Mountain now. It was a pretty hard ride. Tom didn't complain, even though I could see he wasn't used to it. Every once in a while, he almost slid out of his saddle, but somehow he managed to hang on. About noon, we reached Little Creek, and Falk's trail gave out. The other trail, the one we figured was Hooker's, it sort of milled around in all directions and then went off on a tangent. We climbed out from our horses and got a drink of water. It tastes good, huh?
It sure does.
You ever been out this way before, Tom?
Oh, yeah. Not for the last couple of years, though.
Mm-hmm. Any cabins around, place a man could hide out?
Well, not that I remember. You think we're getting close to him?
Well, he could have gone on using the creek to cover his trail, but he'd have to stop pretty soon.
No?
Oh, yeah, a man can't keep riding forever, even Dink Falk. So far, we haven't seen any signs that he made camp, you see.
That's so. Giant Cave.
Hmm?
He might be there, Britt. It's not more than a mile away due south.
Giant Cave.
Now, you've heard of it, ain't you?
No, I don't think I have.
Well, it'd be a perfect spot for a man to hole up. Nobody knows for certain just how far back into the mountain the cave really goes. Some scientific fellas tried to explore it last summer, but, well, their lanterns gave out before they come to the end.
Well, it sounds like something we ought to see even if Falk isn't there. Come on, let's go and have a look.
Oh, that's the entrance there, Britt, beside that slab of yellow rock.
Uh-huh.
I don't see any sign of Falk's trail. I guess he could have come up from the other side, though.
Yeah, that's what he must have done.
Huh?
That pony over yonder. That clump of bushes grazing.
Oh, yeah, I see him.
Easy, Sorrel. Easy, whoa, boy.
You know, Jake Watson said Falk stole a sorrel when he made his getaway.
Mm-hmm. Now, we'd better close in on foot. We tethered our horses on a couple of spruce saplings, moved into the cave entrance. It wasn't a very big hole. We had to sort of bend over and crawl through it. But the room on the other side, it must have been 100 feet long, 50 feet wide. The walls were sheer rock, sort of rainbow-colored, so smooth you'd have thought somebody had been polishing them. And then the light behind us got down to a pinpoint.
He wouldn't be hiding here in the dark, would he, Britt?
Maybe. He heard us coming.
Shh. Somebody up ahead.
Yeah. He
got your gun ready?
Uh-huh.
Now, don't use it unless you're pretty sure of hitting something. If we start shooting, it'll just help his aim.
Okay.
All right, now back up against the wall here behind you.
Falk! We know you're in here, Falk. You go any further, you'll get lost. You'll never find your way out. Hey, you hear me, Falk? You're wasting lead. You can't see us. We know that.
You can't see me neither.
But we don't have to. You've got to come out sooner or later, and we'll be waiting. All right, we're going to leave you now, Falk. We're going outside and wait.
Hey, where you are?
You giving up?
No, I ain't. And I ain't alone.
What?
I got somebody with me. Friend of yours, I reckon. We're coming out together. And if you try to stop me, I'll kill him.
What's he talking about?
He ain't lying, Brett. It's me, Spud Hooker.
Spud?
I caught up with him last night, but he got the draw on me. Hold your fire, Brett. He means what he says. He'll kill me if you don't hold your fire. You gotta do what he told you, Brett. You gotta.
All right, Bob, come on.
Start backing up towards the entrance. I don't hear you moving.
Brett, please.
All right, let's go, Tom. We backed out into the daylight, Tom and me, and waited for them. About a minute later, Spud Hooker marched through the mouth of the cave, half scared to death. Dink Falk was right behind him, holding a .45 aimed at the small of Spud's back. I was pretty sure he wouldn't hesitate to pull the trigger either. Sheriff Tinsmith was right. He's just a wildcat killer. He had that stampede look in his eyes as he stood there blinking against the sun. Same kind of a look you see in a steer when the herd's shoving him along. You can't stop or be trampled to death.
Hang off your guns, both of you. Take them off, or I'll fix your friend here.
Falk gave Spud a shove with his gun, and he jumped forward. There was an opening now between him and Falk. The next thing I knew, Tom dived forward.
Get out of Spud!
Tom tackled Spud, and he rolled over. The bullet missed him, but Tom was in range, and he took it. Falk aimed fire again, and I managed to get my gun out. The bullet hit his thigh and spun him around. Then his leg buckled, and he fell face down. He hadn't let go of the pistol yet. He started to bring it up. Drop it, Falk! For a second, his finger went right on squeezing the trigger, but... Nah, he just didn't have the strength. Tom? Tom, you all right?
Sure. Yeah, it's hardly bleeding.
I should have let Falk alone. I should have let you handle him, Britt.
Well, I don't know. Looks to me like Tom did most of the handling around here. I mean, if it hadn't been for him,
I guess I had you figured wrong, Tom. I never thought you'd be the one to save me, but...
I wasn't saving you, Spud.
Huh?
I don't like you. I never did. And nothing's gonna change that.
Then why?
I like Ellen. I like her a lot, but... Well, she's in love with you. You got yourself killed to just hurt her and wouldn't do me no good.
Ellen tell you she's in love with me?
She didn't have to.
When she finds out what happened today...
She ain't gonna find out.
I'm gonna tell her. I'm gonna tell her myself.
I don't want her to know.
It's for me to decide.
Now listen here, Spud Hooker.
You do the listening for a change.
No,
I thought I taught you a lesson last night, but it looks like...
Now, hold on. Now, I think we ought to get Tom to a doctor, don't you? If we don't, Ellen won't have no way of choosing him, even if she wanted to. Now, come on, Spud. Come on, give me a hand. Now, we tied Falk onto the back of his pony and started off for town. I sure didn't know what Ellen was going to do about Spud and Tom. Oh, you never know what a woman's going to do when it comes to, you know, falling in love and marrying and all that sort of thing. But I did know one thing. Well, that picking Tom to go along with me, I had been a pretty good choice. Ellen probably...
hardly could do a whole lot worse, you know.
Ladies and gentlemen, the tradition of religious freedom and of religious worship in America goes back to the very founding of our country. So, in these days of world crisis, when our nation and all its citizens need spiritual strength and guidance, all of us should think again of what religion means to us and to our country. For it's religious faith that makes our way of life possible. During November, people of many faiths are joining in a great Religion in American Life campaign. So, whatever your faith may be, you are asked to join in this campaign. Be sure to attend and support the church or synagogue of your choice. And if you have children, by all means, light their life with faith. Bring them to worship this week. The Six Shooter is an NBC Radio Network production in association with Review Productions. It is based on a character created by Frank Burt, and the transcribed story is written by him. Mr. Stewart may currently be seen in the Universal International picture Thunder Bay. Others in the cast were Jeanette Nolan, Frank Gerstle, Robert Griffin, Forrest Lewis, and Sam Edwards. Special music for this program was by Basil Adler, and the entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. All characters and incidents were fictitious, and any resemblance to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. And incidentally, a great many of our friends have written in to thank us for putting the Six Shooter on the air. And a surprising number of letters have requested the name of the theme you are listening to right now, and where it might be obtained. Well, we're sorry, but it is music that has been recorded exclusively for broadcast, and is therefore not available for home use. But we are grateful nonetheless to all of you who have written. Your kind letters are always welcome. This is Hal Gibney speaking.
Thanks, Hal. Yeah, I let that play out. Escape from Smoke Falls, original air date, 15th of November, 1953. I let it play out, meaning I let the little spiritual promo trail off there to conclude it before the credits. There was a polio blood donation PSA there during, between acts one and two. I don't know. Sometimes I have trouble deciding on what to keep and what not to keep to preserve some sort of historical integrity of this. Obviously, some of the commercial stuff is forbidden. You know, like blue coal for the shadow. But generally, the Six Shooter is kind of considered wholesome. Is what I've read quite a bit regarding its production. Of course, Jimmy Stewart was involved, so that's wow. Sorry, I'm trying to recue this. I just figured it out. I'm gonna close out with this. This was sent to me from KNDY Radio, Marysville, Kansas. I want to thank the production studio from there for getting me a copy of this. I believe it's the Marysville High School Band, and we're recording from the early 70s. I wasn't able to confirm the title. To be honest, I'm not really prepared to finish out the last couple of minutes, so we're going to play out this, and then, because it's going to be 60 degrees here, I got something queued up for spring. This is Arthur. You're listening to The Grand Hour, 91.5 FM, WMFO Medford, WMFO.org for those on the web, Tufts Freeform Radio.